Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage? Shopify's there to help you grow. Plus, Shopify's award-winning help is there to support your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/marketplace, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/marketplace now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/marketplace.
Marketplace is produced in association with the University of Southern California.
I know what you're getting for Christmas. We all get to keep our payroll tax cut for at least two more months. But when Congress returns for the new year, what happens then?
I urge them to keep working without drama, without delay, to reach an agreement that extends this tax cut as well as unemployment insurance through all of 2012.
Next question, how are we paying for all this? From American Public Media, this is Marketplace.
Balance your life with dollar signs. Tune into Marketplace Money this weekend for a look at the issues affecting your wallet. Whether it's investing, renting an apartment, or sending your kid off to college, we'll help you navigate.
From the Frank Stanton Studios in Los Angeles, you're listening to the Marketplace podcast for December the 23rd. I'm Bob Moon in for Kai Ryssdal. Glad tidings on this Christmas Eve Eve. Thanks for making us a part of the hectic holiday schedule. So the deal is done. Within a matter of hours, Congress passed and President Obama signed an extension of this year's payroll tax cut. For all the legislative huffing and puffing over the deal, the results are underwhelming. Just 2 months' worth of the payroll tax break, extended unemployment benefits, and a delay in Medicare reimbursement cuts. The cost, around $33 billion. Our D.C. Bureau Chief John Dimsdale has been looking into how it's being paid for.
There are no tax hikes on millionaires, no spending cuts, no deficit increases. Instead, mortgage lenders will pay higher fees to guarantee their loans with the government mortgage finance companies Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac. And that increase will be passed on to mortgage borrowers.
At the borrower level, I mean, it's not good, but it's, you know, we think the impact is going to be very moderate.
Bose George, a mortgage analyst with Keefe, Bruyette & Woods, says starting in January, anyone who takes out or refinances a $200,000 mortgage will pay about $17 a month more.
If you're getting a mortgage now and your rate is, say, 4.25%, the guarantee fee component of it is only 0.2% of that, taking your rate up, say, from 4.25% to 4.35%.
He says right now the fee increase won't even be noticed by most borrowers because mortgage rates have fallen to record lows. But the fee hike, some call it a tax on homeowners, will be felt long after the income it generates has been spent, says mortgage economist Tom LaMalfa.
If one looks at this on the basis of a 30-year mortgage, it translates into a cost increase of about $4,000, and that's for what amounts to only a two-month payroll extension.
And if you think this is hard, just wait until the new year when negotiators try to find a way to pay for 10 months more of the payroll tax holiday. In Washington, I'm John Dimsdale for Marketplace.
And from there, let's head right to our weekly wrap on Wall Street and beyond. Joining us live now, Cardiff Garcia from the Financial Times Alphaville blog and our own New York Bureau Chief Heidi Moore. Happy holidays, you two.
Happy holidays.
Hey, Bob.
Let me start by asking you if I'm the only one who sensed this week that this is the kind of pressure House Republicans were getting from their constituents.
Why? Why are you taking our Christmas tree? Why?
What about it, Cardiff? Were the Republicans running the risk of taking on the role of Grinch at precisely the wrong time?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, they really backed themselves into a corner here. The problem was that bipartisan legislation had already been passed in the Senate, so there was no way for them to avoid being blamed for payroll taxes going up on 160 million Americans. And that was something that they couldn't possibly face, given that we're going into an election year and there really was nowhere else to turn. It was clear that it would have been their fault. So, yeah, the economic impact of this thing not having passed has been known for a very long time. So this was purely political.
Was it just political, though, Heidi, or did Congress finally hear the message that I've been hearing from a lot of economists that the recovery is just too fragile to fool around with right now?
If Congress started listening to economists, that would be a huge departure in their reasoning. No, I don't think it was that. I do think that it was political, but it also showed in a good way the nihilism of playing things politically, right? Republicans had managed to grab this kind of populist platform for a little while with the debt ceiling, another big financial issue. And they had claimed that and gotten a lot of support for it. But now they lost it. You know, they lost something that should have been their own issue on payroll tax cuts, which is a Bush administration idea in the first place. So if any economist managed to get through the noise of the politics, God bless them. But mm-hmm. I doubt it was the case.
Yeah, just not in my paycheck. Huh? Mm-hmm. Cardiff, exactly. We just heard John talking about what the Republicans have been arguing, that we've got to pay for these tax cuts and benefits somehow. We heard how we're paying for this latest round. But what about going forward? How are they going to do it?
Well, it's unclear. And Harry Reid actually said today that Congress is going to have to get, quote, inventive, which should probably make all of us a little bit nervous. But what I think is going to happen is that the Republicans are going to push for the kinds of things they usually push for, which is benefit cuts. They might try to get this federal pay freeze extended. And Democrats are probably going to push for higher taxes on rich people. Who knows what the outcome of that is going to be? But I would actually make the point also that It's not necessary that the thing actually get fully paid for. To be perfectly honest with you, a little bit more deficit finance stimulus next year would be perfectly appropriate. Whether or not it's going to happen is really difficult to say, given that, again, it's an election year. But in terms of what the right thing to do would be, well, it's just pass the thing and find a way.
And Heidi, we had still more uncertainty generated by this latest dispute over the tax cut extension and the mixed message that the economic indicators have been giving us, have been throwing us for a loop as well. How are you feeling as we head into 2012? Are we in for a long, cold economic winter, or are the indicators looking up?
Sure. Well, my own personal feelings notwithstanding, I would say that the economic indicators actually would have surprised us all, right? They've been more positive, and it's really hard to tell where that's coming from. You're seeing consumers spending more. We're probably going to have a great holiday season. You're seeing, you know, all sorts of indicators show that we may slowly be coming out of this recession. Now, we've seen kind of false hope like this before, but why not cling to it? What else do we have? You know, it could be better going into next year, but the main thing is hiring. And once we see that come up, we know we're in safe space.
Cardiff, where is your optimism needle, if you will?
Nowhere to be found is where my optimism is. I mean, Heidi's right. We have seen this kind of thing before. We saw it last year at around the same time. So I think it's very possible that some of this is just seasonal trends. It may not even be getting captured in the data. But the more fundamental problem, again, is the severity of the recession that we're still trying to recover from. So this would be fine if this were a normal period of economic expansion, but it's not. We have a tragic jobless problem, especially for the long-term unemployed, and we're just not seeing the kind of growth that's going to meaningfully reduce it.
Come on. Get with
Merry
the holiday
Christmas,
spirit.
By the way.
Yeah. Cardiff Garcia of FT Alphaville and our New York Bureau Chief Heidi Moore. Have a great holiday, folks.
Thanks. You too, Bob.
Thanks, Bob.
It was Jingle All the Way on Wall Street today. Details when we do the numbers. So, if you know the biblical story of Christmas, you know the three wise men and the gifts they brought with them. Say it with me. Gold, frankincense, and myrrh. Well, that first one still makes it onto a lot of Christmas lists, but this year myrrh crops have been hit by drought. And you might want to snap up some frankincense for that special someone, because I am, to be frank, incensed to learn that it's looking like there could be a lot less of it soon. From the Marketplace Sustainability Desk, Eve Troll reports.
Frankincense is smelly, dried tree sap. And back in BC times, it was indeed the finest gift ye could bring.
There have been many times in the history of humanity that frankincense has been more valuable than gold.
Caredwin Hirschberger runs Devonshire Organics, an incense and soap company in Texas. She says today the good stuff runs $200 a pound, much less than gold. But it's still kind of rare. Frankincense comes from boswellia trees that only grow wild in Africa and the Middle East.
Very tough, desert-dwelling trees, and they tend to be extremely old trees. They're still very controlled by individual family groups.
Those families make cuts in the trees, then scrape off the dried droplets of sap, called tears. But droughts in the region mean less sap, more over-harvesting. The sap also protects the trees from pests, and less sap's led to a deadly beetle infestation in Ethiopia, a major supplier. Jason Islamia runs a greenhouse in Arizona. He's tinkering with tougher Boswellia trees that can stand up to climate change and grow in the U.S.
With a little bit of care and understanding, one can definitely commercialize frankincense.
He can sell you a starter plant on eBay.
Costs about $55.
Or a full-grown tree ready to tap for frankincense. That's $1,500. He's already sold out for Christmas, but you have a scriptural out. By the church calendar, the wise men didn't show up with their precious frankincense until January 6th. I'm Eve Troe from Marketplace.
This next story doesn't come with ancient ties. Think of it as more of a modern-day tradition. Celebrating the holidays with some hoops. For pro basketball fans, it's a gift they've had to wait to open, while players and owners sorted out their differences. But the wraps come off this Sunday for the first game of the regular season. Still, it's no Christmas miracle. The NBA usually plays on Christmas. Sally Herships tells us why.
In 1961, Congress passed the Sports Broadcasting Act. Andrew Zimbalist is a sports economist at Smith.
Sunday was reserved for the NFL, Saturday for college football, and Friday for high school football.
And the NBA gets into action at Christmas when college and pro football are winding down. It's the traditional start to the NBA's national TV schedule. But holding games on Christmas Day, really?
And you could think of it this way. If the NBA did not step up on Christmas Day, what would American men do with themselves at Christmas parties?
What indeed? Zimbalist says the post-present opening, post-meal, couch-sitting we do creates a ready-made audience. And this year, fans will be able to watch five games with some of the biggest teams, like the Celtics, Heat, and Lakers. Andy Riegel works with BigLeadSports.com. He says this year's lineup is the NBA's attempt to make up for that nasty labor dispute.
There was a lot of bad blood, a lot of bad publicity, and this is the Christmas present to NBA fans.
And to advertisers. Riegel says during a normal season, big brands like T-Mobile, Taco Bell, and Verizon spend a total of $170 million on marketing. But this year's season is short. There's more at stake for teams and advertisers. So, will fans tune in on opening day? Knicks fan Jeffrey Cohen.
Is your god Kobe Bryant, or does your god have a white beard?
Whatever you celebrate, this year you get a present. In New York, I'm Sally Herships for Marketplace.
Let's depart from our holiday observations for just a moment to take note of another important date. Today happens to be the 40th anniversary of the National Cancer Act. That's the bill that brought government funding for cancer research and a brand new metaphor, the so-called War on Cancer. That phrase wasn't actually in the legislation, but it was used by President Nixon in speeches at the time, and more recently, President Obama called anew for an aggressive war against cancer. As our health reporter Gregory Warner points out, though, some scientists don't like all this belligerent talk.
Scientists have two problems with the war on cancer metaphor. One is the word war. The other is the word cancer.
There is no disease called cancer. There's actually thousands and thousands and thousands of diseases that we just see as uncontrolled cell growth.
Derek Lowe is a medicinal chemist. He's worked on cancer drugs. He says calling for war on cancer is like calling war on fever or back pain. Cancer is the symptom, not the cause.
If you just look at cancer and say, uncontrolled cell growth, there's thousands of ways to get that, and there's probably going to have to be thousands of ways to fix it.
As for the war part of the metaphor, oncologist Alfred Nugent at Columbia University says that word sets up an expectation.
A war is, by its nature, a time-limited event in which there's a defined endpoint, or there should be.
But in the case of the war on cancer,
if we're still fighting for 40 years, then that implies failure.
Does it?
Of course it does. If I go to a bar mitzvah, some old relative will say, so when are you going to cure cancer already?
In four decades, finding the cure for cancer went from a political platform to a punchline. But maybe the bigger problem with declaring war on a disease is that it becomes a problem left for the generals, the doctors in this case. In 1971, when the war on cancer was declared, the entire budget for the National Cancer Institute was for medical treatment, which you'd expect. But since then, the greatest strides against cancer haven't been because of new treatments, but because of better prevention, getting people to stop smoking, get regular mammograms. It would take two more decades for the government to put aside money for that.
In 1990, the Congress forced the NCI director to start giving money to prevention research.
Ann Zauber is a biostatistician at Memorial Sloan Kettering in New York. She says we are winning the war, and she likes the metaphor.
Because wasn't it earlier in time that people didn't even talk about that they have cancer? It was considered to be, you know, it's a death sentence. There's no way of fixing this. So in calling it a war on cancer, it brought into focus that it's a war. We're going to fight it.
Fight the disease and the stigma. In Philadelphia, I'm Gregory Warner for Marketplace.
Coming up.
My personal experience with childbirth was very scary and very lonesome.
Which helps explain why doula-assisted deliveries are on the rise. But first, let's do the numbers. Hiya, jingle bells rang all the trading day, leaving the S&P 500 positive for the year. The Dow Jones Industrial Average rose 1%, or 124 points, to close at 12,294. The Nasdaq advanced 0.75%, or 19 points, to end at 2618. The S&P 500 added 11 points, or 0.9%, to finish at 1265. For the week, the Dow packed on 3.6%. The Nasdaq climbed 2.5%. The S&P 500 advanced 3.7% since Monday. Eastman Kodak snapped up nearly 10%. The photography company said its general counsel would become co-president starting the 1st of January. Prices for 10-year T-notes fell. The yield rose to 2.03%. And you're listening to Marketplace.
Marketplace covers the world of economics. Are you ready for some Freakonomics? We're partnering with the team that writes about the hidden side of everything for a regular Marketplace Freakonomics story, podcast, and more. Just go to freakonomicsradio.com.
From the Marketplace Datebook, here's a look at events coming up Monday. You've probably got the day off. You can go to the mall, but not the bank. Those folks are off, too. On December 26, 1973, The Exorcist was released in theaters. Fond memories there. A rental suggestion for the holidays. And if your tree is artificial, it's probably from China. We imported $79.7 million worth of faux holiday greenery between January and September. More than from any other foreign source. I'm Michelle Philippi.
This is Marketplace from APM, American Public Media. I'm Bob Moon in for Kai Rizdahl. Many of us are going to be entertaining family this weekend, so here's wishing for the best during those gatherings. No fights over politics, no squabbles over Scrabble. Just imagine joy, peace on earth, and goodwill toward Brother Ben. But if you do have a moment when you might want to count to 10, just remember what you're about to hear from commentator Kat Ahn. At least your relatives probably aren't staying for the long haul.
Kat, Mom and Dad are coming to L.A., my brother tells me. For how long, I ask? They're moving in with us, he says. Well, my brother and I weren't as shocked as most 20-somethings would have been. Throughout our lives, our parents had been owners of various businesses, from a sandwich shop to a hip-hop clothing store. This led to fun stories, but sporadic income. When I got older, I attended NYU and decided to pursue my goal of being an actress/writer. Soon, I was in L.A., living with my brother, who had producing goals of his own. That's when we got the call from our parents. I had a choice: get a desk job to help support my parents, or continue to work survival jobs with the hope of booking that huge acting role. So, I took a day job at a tech startup, while the four of us became an awkward family unit once again. We bickered over the fact that I like bougie yogurt. What? I love my Fage, much to the annoyance of my mother, who would have preferred that I get the deal from Ralph's. It was like being transported back to your 14-year-old self, except this time, you're helping to take care of bills. It was hard watching your parents struggle while you yourself were struggling, and so we worked harder. My dad got a job working the graveyard shift. My mother rediscovered her talent for calligraphy. My brother produced his first independent feature. And I discovered stand-up comedy, something I never thought I'd be doing. I wish I had a happy ending, but our family is still struggling. But there's hope on the horizon. My dad met a business partner at church and is opening a business in Los Angeles. Oh, and I wrote a TV comedy pilot based on this whole situation. Come on, this is LA. You love it.
Kat Ahn lives in Los Angeles. Even if you haven't got a sitcom in the works, we'd love to hear your thoughts. Just click on the contact link at marketplace.org. I've never heard about a doula being present in any of the stories I've come across about that famous birth in Bethlehem. But doulas have been around for centuries. In recent years, in fact, there's been a tremendous growth in the number of doula training programs across the country, especially for those who can least afford it. From Birmingham, Alabama, Gigi Duban reports having a doula is a way to ensure a little comfort with the joy of a newborn.
All right. So what I wanted to talk about is, why does labor hurt?
Dahlia Abrams is jamming a fake baby's head through what seems like a really narrow mock pelvis. A few of the girls in class cringe. After all, most of them will be going through this in a matter of months, if not weeks. These are teen moms at Birmingham's Jackson Olin High School.
Feel good, like eating. Who likes to eat?
So what's the key to a pain-free birth? Drugs? Not according to Abrams. It's a doula, someone paid to support a woman through labor. In a hospital, the doula lets the staff know what the mom wants. She might offer a massage or lip balm for chapped lips. These little things add up, Abrams says.
To me, a doula is a way to get a lot of bang for your buck. In a short period of time, you can have a large impact.
Abrams is head of a new nonprofit called Birthwell Partners. She trains low-income women to become doulas for other women in poverty. It's part of a growing trend. Doula training programs are sprouting all over the country. Besides teen moms, Birthwell Partners pairs doulas with pregnant recovering addicts and homeless women.
The benefit is a couple of different things. First of all, a teen mom who is being cared for by a woman who was a teen mom, she feels like she has a connection. You understand where I'm coming from. You get me.
Doula training normally costs around $1,200, but doulas here get trained for free. There's a push nationwide to fund doulas through the healthcare reform bill, and a number of states are working to secure Medicaid reimbursement for doulas. The American Pregnancy Association says referrals to doulas are up 30% over a similar period last year. That makes newly trained doulas like Martha Williams hopeful.
My personal experience with childbirth was very scary and very lonesome.
She was 16 when she had her first child, and completely alone. And now she remembers how even things like the fetal heart rate monitor can seem so jarring.
It sounded like ba-boom, 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 ba-boom. And it just was really loud. You know, and like I learned the other day in a meeting that you can turn the fetal monitor down. I didn't know that.
In exchange for the Birthwell Partners training, Williams will volunteer her services to at least 5 women. She works at various shelters and as a seamstress. And she isn't even sure what she'll charge for her doula services. But whether it's $200 or maybe even $50, she says every little bit helps these days. That extra money can go toward gas or utilities. Really, though, she says she's not in it for the money. And neither are most doulas, says Brad Immler, president of the American Pregnancy Association.
A doula usually does 1 to 2 births a month. A more active doula might do 3 or 4, but really, that's pushing the limit.
And, Immler says, it's usually not enough to make a living.
So most doulas then are looking at doing something else, whether it's childbirth education classes through the hospital or some other belly molds, photography.
Still, Immler says, word is spreading. And with rising demand for doulas and other birth services, some new hope for these women getting back on their feet. In Birmingham, I'm Gigi Duban for Marketplace.
Marketplace is produced in association with the University of Southern California's Annenberg School for Communication and Journalism.
And a final note on the way out, a chance to review some news that didn't quite make the headlines. Courtesy Rico Galliano, Brendan Francis Noonan, and the rest of the Marketplace staff.
Jennifer Collins, reporter for Marketplace. What story are you going to be talking about this weekend?
So I'm going to be talking about how Burger King is losing its crown.
So one of the last monarchies falls, and it has now become a republic?
Well, actually, people don't want to have it their way. For the first time in decades, you know, McDonald's has always been on the top in the burger world. Burger King has been second, but now Wendy's is coming in and actually stealing the crown.
What's astounding, though, is that it's been decades, and apparently our diet hasn't changed at all.
And actually, fast food overall has grown 3% in the last year.
So, cardiologists sleeping soundly, cows not so much.
Yeah.
Rada Beach, senior producer of the Marketplace Morning Report. What story are you going to be talking about this weekend?
Well, this one's from the New York Times. And in the Times this week, I learned that pigeons, after a year of training, can pick up abstract math principles, to which I say, who cares? Why are we studying this? Why does science need to know that pigeons can peck numbers on a screen?
Doesn't that mean that they could be trained, maybe, to do things, like maybe for the military or something?
I guess that's possible, but the only thing I could think of is when they poop on my head, they go, there's one.
Matt Berger, digital director at Marketplace. What story are you going to be talking about this weekend?
Nielsen came out with some data this week that showed the top 10 primetime television shows ranked by the number of product placements they included.
This is when companies not so subtly have their items placed in a TV show to kind of subliminally sell things.
Exactly. So here are some of the top ones. American Idol, as you might imagine, 577 product placements.
Donate to public radio.
The Biggest Loser was number two at 533.
Get a handsome tote bag.
And Friday Night Lights, one of my favorite shows, it's hard to believe it's on the list, number eight with 201 product placements.
Get a bumper sticker and a commuter mug. That's really fascinating, Matt.
I thought so. Visit marketplace.org.
For more of where that came from, tune into the radio show Brendan and Rico do. It's called The Dinner Party. There's a link on our website, marketplace.org. And that's Marketplace from APM, American Public Media. Today, the Dow rose 1%, or 124 points. The NASDAQ advanced 0.75%, or 19 points. The S&P 500 added 0.9%, or 11 points. Our theme music was composed by B.J. Lederman. Marketplace's acting producer is Megan Larson. The executive producer is Deborah Clark. J.J. Yor is the vice president and general manager. Next time on this program...
Just from here to San Francisco, there's four billboards saying we're hiring. So Groupon, Twitter, Facebook, Zynga, everybody's fighting for talent.
A tour of the economic landscape of California's Silicon Valley. Hope you can join us back here for that on Monday. I'm Bob Moon. The happiest of holidays to you. This is APM, American Public Media.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like...
What is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.